Okay, so we're back with another podcast from the Battleborn Duckers. We're doing it remotely at what do you think, Disneyland for men?
I guess you could call it that, or as somebody else calls it, the prison.
I don't know if that was supposed to be said in confidence or not, man.
Once you get in, it's hard to get out.
Are you just talking about duck hunting or just guns in general?
It's like the old mechanic thing. You got to work on them all day. You don't work on yours anymore.
Exactly. You know, if you don't ever want to touch your guns again, become a gunsmith.
Right.
And if you really don't want to work on your guns, become a gunsmith for a manufacturer.
Yeah. Well, like, we're out here at Arms Corps with the one and only, the notorious and the famous Sean Fairbairn. Fairbairn?
Fairbairn.
Okay, I'm going to say it wrong the whole show.
That's fine.
Okay, as long as we're on the
same page. He said you've been saying it wrong for the last 4 years, so why is that going to change now?
I call some guy Steve for the last year. His name's Rich.
Well, he called Bert Kreischer today, Bert Chrysler, and the other guy that was in the room then started calling him Bert Chrysler the entire time.
The comedian?
Yeah.
You guys met that cat today?
No.
Oh.
No.
No.
Oh. We were watching something, and Ron's like, Bert Chrysler? I'm like, man.
Anyway, and we have his son. What's your name?
Andrew. Andrew Fairbairn.
Andrew Fairbairn.
And
we made him come on the show against his will because he's a killer. And I think people should know that he kills more ducks than most people his age. Yeah. Is that a correct statement?
I mean, I learned it from the best, so.
From Brian?
Nope.
Only in my own mind.
Only in my own mind. Anyway, Sean. So what do y'all do out here at Arms Corps, man?
Our manufacturing is done up in Cedar City, Utah. We was doing manufacturing here. We just moved it up last year to Utah. Right now, what we do here is we're the U.S. Service center for all firearms that come in for any repair. Like everything we manufacture, it's got a full lifetime warranty, and it's for the gun. It's not the person. So we'll see that gun, God knows, who knows when, but they're going to know it's free shipping to get to us, free shipping back, lifetime warranty. We don't even make that model in stock. They get a new upgraded model.
Man, that's awesome. And, you know, I remember back in the day, Rock Island Armory, when they first came out with their 1911s, they were new on the market. You know, it was a sub-$200 1911 at the time. And they were, you look at the reviews, and they were getting excellent reviews. They're not sub-$200 guns anymore.
No.
They're a little bit more pricey. But now, I mean, the full range of everything from, you know, sporting type rifles to handguns to revolvers, that Arms Corps catalog has done so much more, and even shotguns as well. So
yeah, I think we've got 21 new models we're debuting at SHOT Show this year.
21 new models?
21.
Well, let's back up a little bit. So you said, like, you have a lifetime warranty of the gun.
Correct.
And it does, like, so if I sell my gun to Brian, and then he sells his gun to your son, and they don't have a receipt, they can still send that gun back.
Yeah, as long as they didn't have, a gun plumber go in there and mess with anything where we can't fix.
So as long as they didn't do any modifications to the gun.
Right, right.
Well, even modifications are okay if it's done correctly.
Well, I got a welder in my backyard. I can make lots of stuff work.
Yeah, well, we've seen those.
Yesterday I saw actually a video of a right-angle shotgun that they took a 12-gauge and pushed it down to a 410 and shot around a corner with it. I'm sure that would be perfectly acceptable in this organization.
Oh, yeah, we could probably bend it back.
Well, I blame my barrel's not straight. That's why I can't shoot any ducks. That's my new go-to.
And you almost have a gun for everybody. I was looking through your catalog last year. You guys were a huge help to our nonprofit when you brought in a lot of guns for us. We bought a lot of secondhand guns from you guys that were demo guns, and we sold them at the banquet, and we had full confidence selling those at the banquet because of your warranty. But, like, that being said, like, you had a gun for everybody, man. Mm-hmm.
That's what we try to do, is we try to make stuff and bring stuff to market that is affordable, and there's not a lot of options for 410s for kids. So we made sure now we got 410s. We got a lever action 410 shotgun.
What size shell could it shoot? Could it shoot like a 3.5 inch?
I think it could probably all. I think all it is 2.75 or 2.5,
okay.
whatever 410. I think it's 2.5. But I don't know. I'd have to look. The pumps might be 3 inch.
Okay.
Yeah, I know that the pumps might be 3 inch. But yeah, we got 410, 20, 12, mainly in the pumps, just because, you know, it's kind of hard to get a semi to run a 410 in semi-auto. So, I was like, nah, let's stay away from that one.
Let's stay away from that mess.
Dude, you could corner that market in a hurry.
Oh, yeah,
but if you're shooting a 410, you don't need your kids shooting a semi-auto anyways. You want them on the pump because you want them to take the time to reset and get back on those.
Well, birds. And that's what I found with my wife. She was new into shooting, and the first gun I bought her was a single action only 22 revolver. And her and my kids both on handguns, that's what they learned to shoot on, because you have to reset and rethink after every shot, right? So it's not, I shoot, my shot placement's bad, I shoot again, my shot placement's still bad. I have to shoot, I can look at my shot, I have time to reset, set my mind right, recenter, and shoot again.
Well, that's kind of what I did with him when I first started getting him on pistols. He was shooting revolvers. Or he would get a semi-auto and only had three rounds in it. You know, and I'd have to teach him, you know, lean in, focus, front sight, press the trigger, reset the trigger, focus, reset, front sight, press the trigger. And this kid could shoot one hole. he's one of those the weird ones that could just do that all day long.
Well, that's part of teaching it, right? Right. So if part of our job as sportsmen is to teach youth to come up, and man, I will tell you that you probably give back more to the youth than just about anybody in Southern Nevada. You guys are always good at providing a shotgun for a youth duck opener. And this year, I guess you provided two, it sounds like. And we do a youth closer, and it's always, hey, if we call Sean, we know we have that opportunity for those kids. And so not only is it teaching the kids and giving them, hey, we need to do this, but let's do it right and teach them the right way to do it, right?
Pretty much. I mean, like when he started getting old enough to hunt, I kind of stopped hunting with a lot of people just because I wanted to get him under the gun type of thing, give him the opportunity. And he started off with a Remington Youth 20 gauge, and we'd be in the goose pit. I mean, and then he wanted more action, and then I switched over to more water hunting over water, and it just kind of morphed into there. So for a lot of years, it's just been me, him, my father occasionally, and my buddy Kevin Rice, before he just moved to Colorado.
And that's the one.
I don't know if that's true, man. I was up at duck camp with you last weekend, and you had a gaggle of people, man. Yeah.
Well, I mean,
like, honestly, it was a rager.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you made the rest of the duck camp.
Wait. I'm going to disagree.
What do you mean you get?
He didn't try to light anything on fire like certain somebody I know, so I think you look at the other side of that camp.
Dude, you guys, they're in that scary trailer, man. And I'm like, shit's glowing and guys are running in and out. And I'm like, what the heck's going on over there?
It's the circus, you know. Yeah. If Ron's involved, there's going to be some circus acts going on for sure, you know. But, no, that's the thing is.
So even though you have a big duck camp, it's only like four main people that you're with.
Actually, three. I don't hunt more than three on the boat just for safety reasons.
Okay.
So it's usually him, my little brother, or my nephew, and like it was supposed to be my nephew last weekend, and he got there at like 11 o'clock Friday night.
You gotta tell that story, man.
Phone starts blowing up at 3 o'clock in the morning. His wife water breaks 2.5 weeks early. He missed the birth by like an hour. You know, he almost made it. So now we're going up this weekend. That way he can hunt off the boat. He's never got to hunt off the boat.
Oh, that's awesome. And
well, how cool was his wife? And let's just put this out to the whole audience, if it was a trap or not. What did his wife say when he showed up?
She goes, oh, you could have stayed. Yeah. Ain't no freaking way.
For
man.
All you
yeah.
young men out there that don't have kids yet and maybe aren't married, or maybe you're in your first couple of years of wedded bliss.
Yeah.
She says, no, I'm fine, just go.
Yeah,
the last thing you should do is go.
And she's the furthest thing from an outdoorsy type person. So, and I was like, yeah, it's probably a good idea you stuck at home. You know?
Yeah, that's a trap, man. Don't put your foot in that one.
I got 27 years of marriage. I know not to touch that baby.
Yeah, my wife picks me out of the house now. She's like, get the hell out. It's duck season. Aren't you leaving? Don't you have somewhere to be?
Right.
No, man. That was a fun weekend, and your camp sounded fun. Another fun thing, did you hear, remember how we had that little new pup in our camp?
Oh, parkour dog, pain in the ass.
Parkour dog that ran around the trailer all night.
Yeah.
And
I love your dog, Preston, but it's a pain in the ass.
Yeah, we tried to keep him out of Sean's camp the whole time. That dog was over there nonstop. What? Now, Now, Sean, let me in on a little secret. Why was that dog over your camp the whole time?
Kept feeding him steak.
He wanted to hang
dipped
with
in whiskey.
Well, I wish you would have dipped in a little bit more whiskey, because maybe that dog would have slept because he wasn't doing much sleeping.
Oh, man. But that was a good camp.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it's always the same group of guys, like all from Vegas, that we've been doing it now for like 5 or 6 years. Sometimes it gets a little rambunctious because there's, you know, just that, you know, there's a lot of these manly men in that camp, as you might say, and there's a little bit of gusto floating around.
A little bit of type A
floating around
camp a little bit.
Yeah,
yeah, go figure.
So I just sit back and just watch the show. I know every year I could probably put a couple of cameras up, record that, and probably be insta-famous. The shit that goes on just in that camp.
No doubt.
The stories. You could ask him, man. You just giggle the whole entire weekend.
Yeah, we were up in Ruby Marsh one time, and there's this old guy out there, and super nice guy. And so we're talking to John Hymas, and John Hymas is like, hey, have you seen my buddy Phil? And we're like, oh, yeah, he's down here. We talked to him earlier. And he goes, yeah, last time I was out, he showed up, pulled out his penis and showed it to me. I'm like, well, that's only at duck camp, right? But I mean, we go.
What happens at duck camp stays at
exactly.
duck camp.
And we did it.
Unless it comes out in the podcast, I mean.
Except for those who bring weird looking trailers. That thing freaked me out all weekend.
One day it'll get painted, but that's a Ron trailer. If you've ever seen a Ron trailer, now you have. And the joke was, we did a duck project a couple weeks prior, and Ron brought this flatbed trailer that he found at a house.
Totally got to paint like free ammo on the side instead of free candy.
Well, and so the joke was that, so Ron rebuilt the trailer that he brought up to the duck project the other day, and now he put a camper on top of it. But it's just funny, and I know we brought Battleborn beer up with us, and we had a ton of Battleborn beer, and I go over to your camp next door, and what he's drinking in his Battleborn beer, and I think we had probably most of the Southern Nevada allotment of Battleborn beer at that duck camp this year. So, no, it was good.
So you had, you came up on Saturday night?
No, I went up Thursday.
Thursday, okay. Yep. But you had a great hunt.
He was hiding
Sunday
from
morning,
you with your
right?
rape trailer.
Yeah, Sunday morning, we probably killed like the only goose in the valley. We were lucky enough to get a banded teal. Yeah, but it went pretty good. It definitely went better than Saturday.
Did it really?
Yeah.
Yeah, Saturday was like knocking the rust off more than anything.
Yeah.
Because where we hunt, they come right off the grass. And they're like 2 feet off of you, and you don't see them until... And then you got to be careful where you shoot, or they'll land in there, and you're not getting them.
Yeah, that's a tough...
Yeah, I mean, you knock them back in those tight cats.
You just don't find them.
It's hard. You could try.
Yeah, I've been going back to the same place for about 5 years now, and we've lost quite a number of birds to where now it's like we don't even shoot in there because you just can't get to them.
Well, and that's part of those areas. So
those little cattails that you walk into and you're like knee-deep in water, and then like you just can't walk through them.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what it's like?
Yeah.
Yeah, and you look at all these areas that we like to hunt, and so... There's areas, certainly areas at Sunnyside that you can hunt and not have to deal with the reeds as bad, right? But most of the areas that we prefer to hunt, especially during an opener, when there's 50,000 people in one location, they're going to be the cattails, so you got to watch your shots. If you go up into Ruby Marsh, I mean, you can't get away from the cattails. I mean, there's no way, so you got to really be good at shot placement. And so that's what I think a lot of newer hunters don't think about, is they don't think about what's going on around them. You got a bird coming in at you, and you drop him, but you drop him overhead. He's going to sail right behind him, right behind you. You're never going to see him again.
Yeah, we've had dogs go in there and try to do this. I don't know if they just make their way down underneath the reeds. But, I mean, you're pillowcasing these birds 10 yards away, and you know they're not living.
Yeah.
And you're like, you're for certain that bird is right there. I send the 6'4" retriever in there and stomp around for 30 minutes, and they're just like, poof.
Well, there's like 3 different types of reeds, right? There's the reeds that you walk into and you're like knee-deep in mud, or mm-hmm. knee-deep in water. And those ones are the hardest to find the ducks in.
Yep.
And then you have the reeds that you can walk on top of, and it's like kind of like a mattress. Mm-hmm. Usually, sometimes when the ducks die, they'll land on top of those.
Yeah.
And then you have the reeds that are no water in them, and there's mud, you know?
Yeah.
And like, I can find the ducks in those, but when they're reeds and water,
yeah,
you're done.
Well, yeah, it's water back there.
We had an issue last year. We were hunting an area, and it was that duckweed out in front of it, so it's super deep, and Scott and I folded a duck. I mean, just folded it up. Both of us hit it. I mean, we watched it pop. And so we folded that duck up, and when it fell, it just went into that duckweed in the front. We never found that duck, and it was 20 yards out from us. I mean, it was, we knew where it was. We watched it go down, and we never found the duck.
Yeah.
And so it's just, you got to be careful when you're hunting those areas. And I've unfortunately watched, we watched this last hunt. We watched people hit birds, watch them go into the reeds, and not even try to find them because they're, they're gone.
Yeah.
You know, and then they're on top of, not only are they losing their bird, but they're going to probably try to hunt a limit and not count those birds in our limit. So now you got somebody just hit 14 ducks and only
found six or something.
Yeah, that's just, it's a waste of the resource. Mm-hmm. I mean, we hunt because we enjoy hunting, but I eat the duck. I eat everything that I hunt. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't make much sense to me to go shoot things just to shoot them and let them fall. We have a problem with that in some of our WMAs that guys will shoot, they don't even try to look for them. And so there's a certain group that there's a bunch of us that are going out now, and when they drop a duck in those reeds, we're sending dogs in after them.
Yeah.
And we're like, here's your duck. And, wait, now you're over limit. Mm-hmm. Now we have an issue, right? Yeah. So
one of my favorite things to do, you know, some of these lakes, you'll have them surrounded by hunters, right? And they'll all be shooting. They'll be dropping ducks, and they won't go get their cripples, and their cripples will swim out. There's this one lake in particular. I will take my dog at the end of the day, mm-hmm. and we will walk the backside of that lake through the mud, and he'll come out with five ducks at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm like, well, I mean, I guess he got his limit.
We used to do that at Adams McGill. Because, like, my boat can go pretty much. I got a Go Devil with the surface drive on it. So it has no keen, no kill, no nothing on it. Just completely flat on the bottom. And that thing drives in. I think I could drive it on pavement if I wanted to. I'm not joking.
A little gator glide for sure.
Yeah. And that thing goes anywhere. It's just, I mean, I wish I would have bought that boat 20 years ago because I kept upgrading to a different boat, you know. From War Eagle to this War Eagle to this Excel to this, and then I got this thing, and it's like night and day. So.
And so you'll go on the backside as we go with the dogs out into the cattails and see what they can find.
Well, I'll go out. We can go out, you know, like when you're on the dike, uh-huh. and you got that part that's normally real shallow, all that mud. We can scoot right across that.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So we just don't hunt it because people walk into it, and like you said. Even right there, man, they'll walk in and be 50 yards from you.
They cut off your fly when you're done.
Yeah, they can't get nothing to work, can't get nothing to circle, so I just go. I go where people
can't
don't
get to.
Well, yeah, well they can, but there's no way they can break it off on us, you know. So.
Yeah, that's the thing is like where we ended up setting up this year. You know, there was somebody 80 yards from us probably, and every bird that came in. First pass birds, 100 yards, 200 yards. They didn't care. They were going to shoot at it. And so since they were between us and the birds, you know, you weren't getting a shot. Where you're hunting, there's no way for them to get between you and the birds coming in, right? So the birds, if they come in from behind you or something like that, it's going to be a little different. But there's really nowhere for them to be there either. So I think we talk about it all the time. It's not only hunting for where the birds are going to be at, but where you're going to have access to the birds where hunters can't destroy your hunt at the same time.
That's why I do, you know, I don't do the Overton thing much anymore. That's why I stopped doing the Keith Pittman stuff. I've never put it this way, guys. I've never took him to Keith Pittman because it was weird back then.
If you want to go to Keith Pittman, we'll take you one day. I mean, it's a good place to go smack some cans for sure.
Yeah, it is good for cans. The Lower Lake's good for cans. But I mainly we're just going to other states, going to other places, you know, a lot up to Sunnyside until it freezes up type of thing, up to Cummings Lake, you know, early season before it freezes up. Just, you know, we get it done that way earlier in the season, then that opens us up to do the, you know, stuff out of state later on in the season.
Yeah, you have a lot of guys that complain. They say, well, I don't want to go hunting because I always get our public lands trash or this or that. And you're like, no, you just have to play the public land right. It's a checkerboard. If you don't want to do that, go somewhere else. There's plenty of places in Southern Nevada to hunt if you want to work for it. People complain about public land that's close to Vegas because hunters are bad, but like if you travel a little bit further, you're going to weed out those bad hunters.
Yeah, like they're just not going to want it as much.
They only have like a 100-mile range. Yeah.
Well, and if you were going to go to a spot that's ridiculously hard to get to, that's going to take every ounce of energy you have to get into it, I almost guarantee you're going to be the only one there.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to make it, you know, extremely unpleasant or have the right gear.
Well, that's kind of hunting in general. Yeah, that's right. Duck hunting. So if you don't like to be absolutely miserable, you don't like to be in a duck hunter. So if it's not the cold and the wet, it's the mosquitoes by the tons. I still have mosquito bites all over me from opener.
Yeah.
You know? And so it's all those things that kind of go into it. But I think the cool thing about your guys' story, and we talked about you with the youth and how big you are on in that youth world, but this is the epitome of what hunting is. So it's not, I could go out and shoot no birds. It's about relationships. And so it's bringing your kids along and having that. My son is up in Eureka now, you know, hunting with his friends, but those are the best memories I have. Is the my favorite hunt of all times was me doubling with my kid on birds sitting at Overton.
Yeah.
And it was Overton, but it was just shooting two birds at the same exact time and watching them drop was an awesome experience. And so as dads, we have a lot of places that we can spend our time, but in a duck blind is the time you're going to get to really be with your kids and kind of have that bonding time. No outside interference, right?
Well, let me ask you, do you think the mosquitoes were worse this year?
They were bigger.
Were they bigger?
They were like horseflies. It was weird.
Man, I hunted one spot at the end of the day, and I was pulling a canoe through cattails, and I was just inhaling them.
Yeah.
And they didn't even taste good, man.
The ones in Sunnyside?
Yeah, they were
down where we hunt, they were big. They look like dragonflies almost. They were big.
So, like, your history in the past, has it always been like that, or were they bigger this year?
Honestly, we got a couple of those thermocells, so we know we don't really pay attention too much, but we forgot the batteries for them. So we had to dose up with that poisonous spray you got to spray on. So.
And it didn't even work.
They drink that stuff. They're like, sweet. You know what? Next time you just come over to the camp, we would have batteries for you. I always carry, we have 4 or 5 thermocells, but It was Friday. We didn't have thermocells on the boat. We went out and just scouting and doing a little fishing, and they just lit me up on Friday. And then we had the thermocell on the boat on Saturday, and when it started, the mosquitoes started to come in. They help a lot, but we had a citronella candle that John brought on the boat.
Candle did the best.
It worked really, really well as well. So it's just
the problem is your, what's your blind made out of?
It's made out of like that decoy netting and the tied. It's the
raffia grass.
No, not really raffia grass. It's more like burlap, different color burlap and all that stuff.
Yeah, and so like you're putting a candle in the middle of a boat like that. I was like, we already had the trailer light on fire.
No, we didn't have a trailer light on fire until the day after.
I don't know. We bring heaters in there, so I mean, we make it comfortable in the boat.
We have a story.
Like, if it lights on fire, we'll just get out.
We have one of the buddy heaters, right? Uh-huh. And that's kind of like the one Ron lit on fire twice at camp. But we're sitting on the boat last year for opener, and I had the heater on the boat, and I go to light that heater up.
That was the first time you ever lit it that season.
It's the first time I lit it that season. We'd use it for a couple seasons, and it worked really well. I lit it, and I hear this big old whoof, and there's flame shooting out of the propane can. And I'm like, well, I got to get this propane can off, and do I just chuck this thing in the water, or what do I do? And we're surrounded by all the dry reeds, and we're sitting in a blind made of dry reed, and I'm like, you know, this could be bad. So I got it off and finally went out, and I'm like, well, I guess we're done with that for the day.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you a question about your guns. Mm-hmm. So what Rock Core Armory does, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, is they sell a budget class gun, correct?
I mean, we've got high end over and unders also, but for the most part, we try to keep, you know, anywhere from that $200 to $800 range.
So yeah, but your semi-auto shotguns for the average duck hunter, what's it running up?
Probably like 550, I'm guessing.
550.
Yeah.
Okay, and can they shoot 3.5 or this 3?
No, we don't got any 3.5s yet.
But you don't need 3.5. But you have the 3-inch shell that you can run through your gun, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And are they inertia drive or are they?
No, they're gas.
They're gas.
Yeah, everything's gas. It's a gas system we designed. It's very efficient.
Okay.
And it runs on. You got 2 different pistons, kind of like the old Auto 5,
okay,
where you had to change the spring out. Type of thing. It's kind of the same deal. So we got a heavy piston and a light piston. That way you're able to run the real light stuff for like dove season and things like that. And then when you're going to run the big heavy 3-inch stuff, you can jump over to the heavy piston, and everything's right on the gun.
Yeah.
So you just pull off the barrel, flip it around, put it back on, and you're
so
in the
you
heavy
can change
piston
in the field if you
need. Oh yeah.
A gentleman that won the gun at the banquet actually reached out to you on Facebook Messenger, mm-hmm, and he changed it in the field and was actually shooting clays that same day.
Mm-hmm.
He was like, I can't get him to eject, and you actually messaged him back. He's like, this is all you have to do, and he's like, change it out, and that's the gun he's hunting with for the first season. So we get a lot of guys they come up to me and Brian and they go, hey, what's a budget gun I could buy? So, and Rockcore Armory, Armscore Rock Island, they make a really good gun for the beginning duck hunter.
Yeah, that Rhea line's a pretty good line of shotguns, and they go all the way up to a competition over under if you wanna go that. And they got some pretty guns. Some of their legend gun and those legacy guns are pretty nice.
But they have
guns
some good features, even the budget series guns, right?
Yeah, so like our entry series guns is called the All Generation. So it's got an adjustable cheek piece for height, and you know, for your cheek height. It's got spacers to adjust length or pull, so you can literally get it for your 12-year-old kid, and that gives him something to shoot until he's 16, 17, 18 and wants to jump into a 12-gauge or something. Then we got the same gun in the 20 and the same gun in the 12. So it doesn't really matter if you're just a small frame person. That's the biggest thing, is like, to me, you know, and I've taught him, I mean, he's almost 6'5", and he shoots a cut gun.
Really?
His length of pull has been shortened.
For people that know, what's a cut gun?
Length of pull from the trigger to the buttstock. You don't realize it, you know, it might be fine in the summertime running a 14-inch gun. That's a common thing, is 14 to 14 and a quarter. But if you shorten it down to 13 to 13 and a half, and you got all your hunting clothes on and your park on, you're not getting your gun stuck in your armpit as you're trying to throw it up. It just gets up there and gets in there.
Is that why I keep shooting off my biceps?
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably why.
It really is just he sucks.
Yeah.
But, I mean, to be honest, if we're going to be honest.
Yeah.
But no, and I think that's the big thing that a lot of hunters don't do, is we may go in and pattern our guns, and I will tell you, I'm horrible at that. I almost never pattern my guns. Mm-hmm. If I'm shooting ducks, I don't need to pattern my gun because I'm shooting ducks, right? And obviously, I know where my pattern is. But guys will pattern their guns, and they'll pattern them in the summer. Uh-huh. Or the off season, or early hunting season, it's 80 degrees out, and then 3 weeks later you're shooting, it's 20 degrees out in the morning, you got thermals on, you got a parka on, you got all this other stuff on, and a set of waders on. Now you've just changed the whole layout of the gun. So
yep.
You're not going to shoot the same as you did when you were in short sleeves, and it's the same thing when you look at a handgun. So much can change your shot just based on grip size. So that's why guns are shipping with multiple grips. And I was doing, you do a squeeze test, and you just squeeze just your grip. Just squeeze it as hard as you can. And if your grip's not fit right, that gun will move in your hand. It'll move left or right, depending on where your grip's at. And so I think it's important for people to, A, get familiar with their guns. What's the best gun to shoot? Whatever you can shoot the most accurate most of the time, right? So you can't, not, it's not going to be the same for everybody. So length of pull is not going to be the same for everybody. Grip size isn't going to be the same for everybody. But what happens? We buy a gun, comes out of the box, we shoot it, and that's the way it stays for the life of that gun. There's a reason they ship with ship pads.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
So how tall are you?
I'm 6'4", but
you're
I'm,
a tall boy,
I'm just
man.
About 6'5".
And yep. How long's your gun?
What is it?
13 and a half.
Yeah.
You're not gonna. How long are your arms, man?
Yeah, like, they're pretty long. They're pretty long.
Does it look like a giant holding a small gun?
It's here today. We'll let you see it.
Yeah, just about. But that's what I've. I mean, I've been shooting that same gun for the past 5-6 years, so I've grown with it, learned how to shoot with it, and I don't have any plans on changing it. So.
Well, I had kids. I was coaching when I was in 4/8. We pulled in and they were on a reservation, and they were the worst stance I've ever seen in my entire life. They're shooting off their heels. Oh. I mean, horrible. They're 48 to 50.
Oh.
And somebody's like, aren't you going to change their stance? I'm like, why?
Yeah.
Sean, let me ask you another question. What would you recommend out of your inventory for a dad getting his kid into hunting? Like, out of the guns you have in stock?
One of everything.
Probably the All Generation 20 gauge.
Why?
Just because you can get, you know, 2 3/4 and 3 inch, takes choke tubes, adjustable length of pull, adjustable cheek piece. We got it in camouflage this year. I think I gave one of them away last Saturday, the burnt bronze with the cam, with the, I think it's that new, what's that new
the
Max?
Realtree?
No, yeah, it's new Realtree Max something, whatever
the Max 5. Five.
Yeah.
No, there's a new one
Max
now.
Seven.
Oh, the Max 7. Max 7 now?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
So, probably that would be the best gun for, let's say, 10 and up.
Oh,
yeah. because it's got a pretty soft recoil pad on it. I mean, it has all the features. It's got a really nice grip. I like our stock on our guns, our shotguns, our pumps. So.
And for someone under the age of 10, you have the brake barrel 410s too, correct?
Yeah, but I mean, those things still kind of boot, man.
Yeah,
they're not good for kids. I don't recommend that for kids.
Worst gun I've ever shot is a synthetic stock.
A 410
stock,
brake barrel though?
20 brake barrel, yeah.
It's so light.
There's nothing to take away any of the recoil in it, right? There's no action in it to
take
anything.
Yeah, there's no action.
Light.
It's a synthetic stock. It probably weighs 3.5 pounds.
But don't you have one or are they all synthetic stocks?
No, I think they're all synthetic now.
But you go to a semi-auto or even a pump gun, there's something to take some of that recoil out of it a little bit.
Even so. The pump 410s, you think, take some recoil out of it?
Compared to a single shot, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have my kids all on the cheap Hatfield 410s when they first start. And they're like, this kicks. I'm like, it's a 410. Stop complaining. This doesn't hurt.
It's not so much the recoil is bad. It's a sharp recoil.
Is it?
Yeah.
This is a quick punch.
Well, that's what they say about the inertia guns, right? Is the recoil, there's no less recoil in an inertia gun, but it spreads the length of that recoil out. So they say if you have kids that are having difficulty shooting, if you put them on an inertia gun, sometimes that helps. Uh-huh. Just because it changes how sharp that is. It's not so abrupt. But I think I made the mistake. My kid wanted a freaking synthetic stock 20 gauge.
Uh-huh.
Brake barrel, single shot. And he was complaining one day because his shoulder hurt. I'm like, dude, it's a 20 gauge. How bad can it be? And I shot it once. I won't shoot that gun anymore.
Yeah.
And I went and put a 3-inch limb saver on it just because that's the only thing that could take the recoil out of that gun.
Yeah, at the last youth hunt, I had a dad out there and he gave his kids, he's like, here are two, brake barrel over under 20 gauges.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, hey, I have a couple semi-autos. Like, why don't we put the kids on those? He's like, well, they'll be fine, the brake barrel 20 gauges. Like, that's going to kick the shit out of them, man, with these duck loads. And I finally convinced them to take the semi-autos. But, I think so. There's nothing worse than bringing a kid out there and putting them on a gun that just knocks the crap out of them. They're not going to want to come back,
Yep.
And I know there's a lot of old school guys. Joel's one of them that still love the pump guns. Cool. And my kid shoots a pump gun. And it's got a 30-inch Hastings barrel on it. He loves that gun. But for me, I can't go back to a pump gun after shooting semi-auto with ducks. I mean, you get follow-up shots off quicker for most people. And now my kid, he got 3 shots off on a bird and jacked another round and got a 4th shot off before the bird was out of range. And so, but most people, that's not going to be the case. And so my personal suggestion is you're not going to save that much money going to a pump gun. And so if you can go up to a more entry-level semi-auto gun, you're going to have more fun shooting. You're going to have more opportunity. You're not going to have to worry about my problem now trying to go back to a pump gun is I forget why I can't figure out why I won't fire on the second shot.
Yeah.
And, Joel was shooting his new gun the other day, and that pump's coming back as soon as he takes a shot, automatically.
Uh-huh.
And so it's a little bit better, but it's just different. It's a different experience, and I couldn't go back, I know for sure.
So, what do you think about for dads? Should they start their kids off on a pump, or should they start their kids off on a semi-auto, man? I know you probably started your kid off on a pump, but he was born in a duck dynasty.
Yeah, he had that Youth 870. That was actually my daughter's. So it kind of passed through the whole family, and now I got 2 grandkids. One's 4, one's 10 months, and 2 grandsons, so we get to start this thing all over again.
The 870 gets passed down. That's what Cody's shooting, is 870 Magnum.
Yeah.
And that's, they're great guns. 870s they're a workhorse, man, and it's almost impossible to destroy them. So having a kid start, and I think all kids should learn the basics. We were talking about it. Learn the basics and learn proper shooting, and so it makes it really easy to just blast rounds with a semi-auto, and kids and Ron have no self-control. Once they pull it once, they're going to pull it 3 times because they're there. With a pump gun, it's a little bit more effort put into it, right? So the kids have to do a little bit. They have to put a little bit more into it.
I don't think it's a good idea to start a youngster off with a semi-auto because it's not going to teach him what he needs to be taught by going slower. There needs to be... you need to teach them how to swing through stuff and pull the trigger through the swing through, and only give them 2 shells. only give them 2 3/4 rounds. That way, number one, it's not going to hurt as much. And as long as dads are doing their jobs and getting the birds in close, they can easily whack them. So, I mean, that's my way of thinking on it.
So what do you learn by slowing down, do you think?
They're going to learn to shoot correctly.
Yeah, follow their
job. You guys look at goes on just on the management areas. All these guys shooting and nothing falling. There's this one old cat that used to go out to Overton that he would shoot at stuff that high, and almost every time he shot, it dropped. Because he was just really good behind the gun. He understood, he understood the mechanics of follow through and leading, and, shot the same load probably for 50 years.
Well, I can read a book 1,000 times. I can watch YouTube all day long. I can understand the principles of shooting very easy. What I can't understand without repetition and actually physically doing it over and over and over again is the mechanics. And with duck hunting, the mechanics are extremely important, because that gun's got to be in the same place every single time, every shot you take.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it's not, it changes your shot. Now, I was leading a bird. Now my gun's not shouldered the same way. Now I'm not leading the bird anymore. Now I'm behind the bird. So it's very important. Just you talk the same thing happens when you start getting to handguns and dry fire exercises, right?
Mm-hmm.
The reason they're important is because it builds muscle memory. And so that muscle memory is important. And if we're rushing through it, we never build the proper muscle memory, because things aren't going to the shoulder the right place at the same time. We teach our 4-H kids, when you're shouldering your gun, you start and you roll it into the socket, right? Mm-hmm. Because you know it's in the socket every time. And they do it every time they shot. And then eventually, you don't have to do that anymore, because you know what it feels like when it's in where it's supposed to be. But if you don't teach those mechanics, then we never get that. So if we slow down to get those mechanics built very well, then when our brain shuts off and we don't have time to think about it, and we go stupid because the duck's in, the mechanics are there.
Yeah, because like what the issue he had when he was a little guy, he'd like to look over the gun. Like, ooh, did it drop? Ooh, did I hit it? And he mm-hmm. didn't have his cheek down. That was his biggest, So we went to Desert Lake Country Club with number 4 20 gauge still shot, and spent weekend on weekend there letting him shoot the sporting clays out there until he finally got it. And then once he got it, we never really lost it.
Yeah, once it snaps, it snaps. And once you have the mechanics and it's automatic, that's why you see your good shooters. Even you talk guys, we know a guy that's won 5 or 6 times the Nevada State Clay Champion, right? Mm-hmm. It's the same routine every clay. So it's a sporting clay. He will go through the same motion every time. It's look at the ground, come up, shoulder the gun, look at the ground a second time, and he has a very specific routine, because that makes everything automatic when he's shooting.
Can you imagine doing that when you're out duck hunting, though? Here they come. Okay.
I know somebody that does that, but it was...
Look up.
It was dove hunting, and with dove land 10 feet from him, we're like, why didn't you shoot that? He goes, I need to put my ear protection on.
Like, hey, safety first, man. You can't hate on people for safety. But duck hunting is a different beast, because you don't have, you have to have your game already set. Like, you brought your kid out to shoot, right?
And we shoot a bunch of competitions too now. So we do a lot of 3-gun and a lot of pistol shooting. So his strongest asset, surprisingly, is the shotgun, still to this day.
Really?
He shoots the pistol extremely well. I mean, he's our only... Well, before he turned 20, he was only our youth sponsored shooter for all of Arms Corps.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So,
damn, you got to turn 20 and then
screw it up. Yeah, then he just kind of now he's just a normal schmo.
Hey, just identify as 14 and you're good.
I could do that now.
Yeah, the baseball players get away with it. What the heck?
Exactly. If I can identify as female, and you can identify as whatever the heck you want.
Right.
So, what do you think? Oh, I lost my train of thought. You distracted me. It's your fault.
Your train has never been on the track, so.
So when it comes to duck hunting, you think that it's super important to get someone out there before season shooting then?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, the more times that you can get them busting clays, and it doesn't have to be at one of these fancy sporting clays things. You can just buy one of those hand clay throwers. That's what's
Yeah, especially when I was a kid, it definitely helped me a lot going out early season, getting prepared for the season. You know, every time you prepare for something, when it's actually time, it usually always helps. This time, opening day in Sunnyside, whole off season, we did not go out and shoot our shotguns. And I'll tell you what, it definitely showed on opening day, opening morning.
Well, you gotta definitely tell. You gotta go to Doves, because you know what they say, Doves pre-gaming for ducks. Yep. So that's all it is, you know.
Okay, I remember my question. Sean, what do you think about throwing red dots on shotguns for duck hunting?
I've got red dots on my competition shotgun, and I like it. So.
Have you ever tried a duck hunting? Does it translate over?
It could. Like on a Benelli, my competition Benelli shotgun I had a red dot sight. I melted into where you got the step up on the rib, right in front of that step up, so it was the lens was right in line with the rib, so you didn't have to have any different weird high hold or anything. Man, that gun was awesome. I actually used that gun with a 21 inch barrel goose hunting.
Oh, wow.
Well,
that's a short barrel for geese too.
Yeah. You only need 18.
That's well, awesome.
You can do anything if you work at it, you know, if you get proficient.
You figure that extra 9 inches a 30-inch barrel has or whatever, it's only 9 inches closer to the bird.
Oh, yeah.
The propellants and wads and steel shot now, the 30-inch barrel guns you really don't need. I mean, it's...
Well, all you got to do is, if you got a 30-inch barrel, you smack a duck in the head. And you don't worry
about
what about
people saying they swing better when they're longer?
Well, they probably do. I mean, like my 28-inch gun is the gun I like the most for swinging. I like the way Benelli swings. Mm-hmm. I just could never shoot it really well. So that's where the red dot helped.
Well,
and then I bought so many different guns trying to find something comparable to the Benelli that was a little softer shooting. And I got that VersaMax that I gave him, but he started shooting, and then I was not getting that back.
You know, I have
Versailles. Yeah. Oh, I love that thing.
What I don't, my kid's got that 870 Magnum with the Hastings 30-inch barrel on it. It's once you get it going, it swings. Mm-hmm. It swings smooth. It's beautiful. But getting it going is the part, right? So it's a heavier barrel, so you got to get that momentum. It's the momentum that's doing it. You got to get that momentum going. So I think you're slower on the beginning of your shot, but you can follow through probably a little bit better. So I think there's a trade-off. You know, and I shoot a 28, you know, and that's pretty standard anymore. But getting on that gun, you can just feel it sluggish at the beginning, and then it swings smooth through the rest of it. So I think it's going to change. Just like me, this year I went to a European-style gun, and so that having to float a duck, I struggle. Because I have to, it has to be in my head. I got to tell myself every time I shoot, float the duck, float the duck, float the duck. And
how
so,
if you don't
work with your guns and you don't know what's going on, or you don't understand the why, or patterning helps, then you're never going to be able to fix your problem. So,
Sean, tell me what guns. Explain to everybody what a European gun shot means versus a different gun.
Most European guns, they pattern high, where they shoot like a 70% of their pattern at 30 or 40 yards above the circle that you put on the piece of parchment paper or whatever, butcher paper. Most American guns, Browning's, Winchester's, Remington's, they shoot more of a 50-50 pattern. So that's why guys struggle from shooting an American gun all those years, going to a European gun, and now they don't have to. European gun, you swing under the bird, you know, like as you're looking down the rib, you like dragging it past their feet, get the thing going, bang, and you hit the bird. Where you used to just put the bead through the bird, back of the bird, in front of the bird, swing, bang, and then drop the bird. So that's where I struggled, because I was so used to the American pattern gun, because I always had an 1187. So that was my big thing with them. That's why they never really, and plus that they really kicked hard. Because I mean, we were using 3.5 inchers and going up to Canada and stuff, and all, you know,
number Kansas. Twos with heavy loads. And,
yeah, we all shooting heavy shot. And
now, what about your guns here at Arms Corps? How do they pattern?
They're 70-30 because they're a European gun.
Okay, so you're gonna want to drag the feet.
Pretty much everything. All the Turkish guns are gonna be a 70-30 gun for the
pretty
most part.
Pretty much, yeah.
And I will tell you that I have a TriStar TSA Magnum, which was the old version of their Magnum line, and that's a 50-50 gun. Mm-hmm. So it shot like an American gun. It was beautiful. I went to a Gearson, and it's a European style. And man, I've struggled. You know, I was really good at the end of last season. Mm-hmm. Didn't shoot a lot off season, and this season I struggle again to start. And so knowing the why too. So that European gun, they use them for shooting pigeons, and so pigeons come from behind you and they come straight up, and so you're better to miss high. And mm-hmm. so the European guns are set up for that style of shooting. American guns, the ducks are going to stay the level they're going to stay. They're not going to shoot up like a pigeon, mm-hmm. and so that's why. And so you just have to know your guns and be proficient at them.
Are you able to correct that with how you set your your spacers in the back?
Oh, the
correct
comb?
It so it goes, or is it a barrel issue, or what's causing it to do that pattern?
It's just the way they turn the barrel.
Is it?
Yeah, I mean, you could go in there old school and put some rods down and try to bend the barrel a little bit to get it to go, but that's always hit or miss because it always wants to spring back to its original position because it's already been heat treated and everything. And, you know, it's just one of those things where you almost got to learn to shoot it that way or put a red dot on. Yeah.
One or two. Well, that's interesting. I think a lot of guys don't even understand that, Brian. Like that, depending on the gun you buy, that's where you have to place it.
Well, and I think it comes again. We pull the gun out of the box and we shoot it. And if I hit something, I hit something. If I don't, well, it must be the gun or... We never think back of the why, and so part of our jobs as shooters and sportsmen is to know our equipment. And so if you're not really going out and patterning things and working things and knowing what your equipment capabilities can do, and we have this discussion. We had a discussion on our preseason stuff about, you know, it doesn't matter whether you have a $10,000 gun or you have a $500 gun. If you can use that firearm effectively, it's going to do the same damage, right? So you're going to kill just as many birds with a $500 gun if you know that gun and you shoot that gun and you're proficient with it. You may shoot more birds with that gun than you are with a $10,000 or $30,000 over-under competition model because you're not used to that gun. You have no idea how it shoots. And so we've seen that. I've seen that with my own shooters. My youth shooters would come in and, you know, we had the SX3s, full competition package on them. Beautiful guns. They shot amazing. $5,000 a pop, you know, they were awesome guns, but they were designed for competition.
Mm-hmm.
These kids were used to shooting the gun that they got out of their dad's closet, and they were lights out with that gun. As soon as I put them on the SX3, they couldn't hit the broadside of a barn from the inside.
Yeah.
And it's just, we talk about this, and I know there's a lot of people that are you shoot a TriStar, you're an idiot. Well, if you're comfortable with that TriStar, and you can kill birds with a TriStar, shoot the TriStar.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I mean, I don't really care where it's made. If I shoot it well, I shoot it well. Like, I've had an SX3 for the last couple of years, and I love that gun. And they came out with the 4, and I was like, all right, I'm going to buy the 4. My nephew's just getting into hunting, so I was like, I'll just give him the 3. Well, after last weekend, I mean, I bought it the end of last season, and I wasn't hitting very much with it then. And then it just confirmed everything Saturday. So Sunday night, as we're driving home, I get him on the phone, and I was like, hey, I want my 3 back. You can have the 4.
I was going to say, man, I can sell your 4 for you. I know somebody that's looking.
Well, what they did on the 4 is those, like, the 1, 2, 3, you know, anything before, let's say, 2021, I don't know if it's Browning and Winchester doing it, but the SX4 ain't even made in America anymore.
See,
it's made in Spain.
And that's the problem with
Does it shoot like a Turkish gun?
Yeah, I think
now?
It does. Yeah, it shoots high.
Oh, that would make sense.
We confirmed it on Saturday.
And I think that's what people need to realize is that there's been a lot of changes in the gun industry.
Yeah.
There's a lot of manufacturers that had really good products that have now merged and changed lines. I will tell you, we shot Heavy Hammer a lot. I've shot a ton of Heavy Hammer. And we've shot Heavy Hammer last couple weekends, and it has not performed like the way Heavy Hammer had performed in the past.
Yeah.
And Remington bought out Heavy Hammer. And so they brought out Heavy Shot. And so that company now is there. I'm pretty sure they changed something in that package that changes the way that round shoots.
All they got to do is run, go to a cheaper wad, and that gun's not going to, well, load ain't going to be as effective.
I know for a fact, I know for a fact the holes on them are different, because they used to run a gold hole, now they're running a red hole, which makes sense because it's a Remington round, right? Or so it's federal, I think, bought heavy, but so it's, we know something changed, I know something changed, and the funny thing is, when I was most effective, I shot a Rio, and that was shooting better than the heavy that's got 15% bismuth in it. So for me, something's changed, and so we have to look, what we thought we knew last year may not be the same this year. So you may have to reevaluate if you bought new ammo, or you hadn't bought a gun that was Savage is no longer this outdoors. Savage has now been bought out. So those are all going to change, and Remington's going to be the worst because they just piecemealed everything to different places everywhere.
Yeah.
So,
Sean, let me ask you a question. Can your chokes change your pattern? Can it change your 70-30 pattern
for
whatever choke? It's all about the way that barrel's
curved. Yeah, it's all the way about how the barrel's
curved. I'm trying to fix a problem I can't fix.
Yeah.
One other question. What kind of loads are you shooting your guns? What's your favorite ammo?
We run, I don't know, Andrew, what is that up there?
Is that Fiocchi?
Oh, the Fiocchi?
Yeah, the Fiocchi.
Dude, I ran that for a long time. That was a really good ammo, performed really, really well.
Yeah, and I don't shoot the fast stuff. I think it's just 1350.
Yeah. Now, what about Arms Corps? I know they're making ammo. Are they planning on coming out with any steel shot or anything like that?
Probably eventually. Yeah, probably eventually we will. I mean, it's just like right up until this year, I mean, we had stuff that wasn't even off the boat yet, and we already had a check in our hands. Like, we couldn't make enough ammo to get out, and then luckily stuff slowed down a little bit, so now, you know, we'll probably start diversifying a little bit, and I'm going to push them to make a couple of good shotgun rounds.
Are you guys having primer issues still?
No, because we stopped using the primer from Croatia. It was just too hard. It was a hard primer.
So, and you guys are, are you guys having a hard time getting primers? I know that's been
we actually started our manufacturing plant to manufacture our own primers because, once Federal and ATK and CCI and all those guys got together and they turned around and buy Remington, I don't know if they're trying to choke off the industry and not supply the primers, but I mean, it's even a problem for like reloaders, just trying to find primers.
Well, it's impossible.
Yeah, you can't find them if you're in the private market. I will tell you that talking to Remington or to this reps, and when we talked to them, they said the problem is that their back order is in the billions of dollars. If they stop taking new orders today, it's going to take them 10 years to catch up.
Yep.
And so that's
an issue.
Well,
that's not necessarily true. I mean, when the market was good, you know, a year and a half ago, probably so. But as stuff starts to cool off, you get a lot of vendors that will cancel their POs. You know, as soon as stuff becomes available overseas, or through some supplier somewhere. I mean, us, it's a little different. I mean, we're stuck with, you know, we were stuck with running ATKs, and then once it really tightened up, luckily Martin found a vendor at the EWA show. It's like the European version of SHOT Show in Nuremberg, Germany. So he was able to find a vendor back there. And the first couple of batches we got worked real good, you know, pistol ammo wise. Mm-hmm. Ran through everything, and then I don't know if they did a metallurgy mix or something, but the primers got hard. So you'd get light strikes once in a while. You know, especially like on the striker fired guns. Not so much on the 1911s, but like the striker fired guns, it didn't want to go off.
Yeah, that becomes an issue with, especially when you're rebranding something or you're doing your own stuff with somebody else's parts, right? So we have somebody else's primers, and it makes it tough. So that quality control, you don't always have it in your hands to do it.
Yeah, that was the big reason where he just finally said, you know, heck with it, and dropped a couple million dollars and just started manufacturing our own.
But that's what I'm talking about. I love those type of guys.
He's been so good about bringing stuff in-house and diversifying where things are, right? So we started with things overseas and some stuff being done in the United States, and we opened the Cedar City plant. And, but now we're there's a lot more happening. There's more types of guns coming in. You know, Rock Island Armory was a 1911 forever, right? Now there's revolvers. I mean, the line of guns, if you went to SHOT Show and walked into the Rock Island Armory booth this year...
It was freaking huge, man. It's not it going to be bigger this year?
Probably.
It's not the Rock Island Armory Arms Corps that was... that you think about from the old days when you had the $200 1911s, right? So it's a conglomerate. I mean, there's a ton of stuff that you can go shoot for, and everybody can find something of interest within that firearms line.
And within their price range, man. It's just an all-around affordable gun.
Well, yeah, it makes it nice where he's got a lot of opportunity where a lot of these other firearms manufacturers don't, because the company's still family owned. So it's a lot like Ruger, where you know he wants to come out with a new line of guns, or he wants to open up a new plant somewhere in Turkey, or where's our revolvers made at? Yeah, so we got a thing going on in Czech Republic. They make really nice revolvers. Really, really nice. 22 mag, 357. So really nice guns. The stuff in Turkey, and of course the Philippines. I mean, the factory there looks like probably four city blocks.
Where's that in the Philippines?
Marikina.
Okay, awesome.
Yeah.
Well, that's the cool thing about it is you do have that. And, you know, people, I love the fact that people want to buy American, but I will tell you, it's the firearms market. I mean, it's an overseas market right now. So most of your shotguns are coming out of Turkey right now.
Yep.
I mean, most manufacturers have moved into Turkey. You look at companies like EAA, and if people don't know the history of EAA, they would take one country make this gun, one country make that gun, one country make that gun. And I will tell you, some of the things from EAA, the reviews on them are out of this world. They had a 9mm chambered 1911 frame that was, if you would have read when that gun first came out, the reviews on that gun were just second to none. Everybody's like, this is the most underrated gun on the market. Now the gun sells for $800, right? And so what we used to have is quality control issues from those places. These companies are coming in like Rock Island, and they're, hey, this is my brand, and I'm overseas, but this is my factory overseas, so I can control that a little bit better.
Yeah, so what's nice, I mean, you got to look at over here kind of like the vendor. So everything the factories make come right here to this location. From there, it goes out to all the stores. All right, so they have their QC department. We have our own in-house QC department. And then this right here is the final say of QC, because at the end of the day, service center is going to see the bad guns, the guns that actually have issues, what needs to be fixed. And so when I fire off an email, it's like a fire drill going on, because they're like, the boss is calling. What, you know, we got to find out what's going on. Let's get this fixed. So they're really receptive that way. I mean, so we're able to catch stuff a lot sooner than I think most other companies. When there is an issue, so I think that's what puts us in, up front when it comes to that.
How many other arms dealers are there in the Philippines? Arm manufacturers.
I think just one, and I can't remember the name of them. They're kind of a small unit.
Yeah, well, that's something I really like, man. Is like I lived in the Philippines for 2 years when I went on a mission.
What I think that
the Filipinos over there, like, I love those people. And I bet they're super appreciative for the work you give them.
Well, I think the cool thing about this is I know for a fact that, you know, Sean and I, we've talked quite a bit, but I know there was a certain gun that was going to be on the market, and then Sean got a hold of it, and he's like, this isn't ready. Yeah. I got to do too much work to get this ready, and so we need to fix some things. So I know with Arms Corps, when it comes through Sean and he goes through his QA process, that if something's not right, it's not going to get released to the market, right?
Oh, you can. So. I mean, you can ask Martin. When something's not right, I will scream from the rooftop to halt it. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, it's going to come back to us. It's going to come back to me, my department, where I've got to
fix everything.
Yeah, and you got the customer upset. By that time, you know, the, you know, could put a bad taste in their mouth, even if we pay for everything, like we do. You know, it's just.
Well, I don't
rather not have any of those.
I don't want to buy a gun and then have to send it back a month later because it's not working, right? And then I don't have a gun for a month.
Yeah.
Or you're sitting on the duck blind that doesn't fire.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's super important that the quality control be there, and I think you guys do a great job of that. You know, even across that, such a wide variety of that package, that there's not anything going out that's inherently an issue, right? Mm-hmm. That we're having the same issues over and over again, and we know if I buy a Rock Island gun, it's going to do this, and we have some of that in some of the other manufacturers, and we have some issues, and now there's always going to be things that slip through the cracks. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just the nature of the business.
Part of, yes, I mean, at the end of the day, a firearm's a tool.
Yeah.
Sometimes there's quality control, sometimes there's metallurgy problems that just slip through.
There's user error, too.
Yeah, and user, I mean, I could say, what do you say, 50-60% of all repairs is user error?
Yeah, I'd say 50% just about. Yeah.
What's your guys' turnaround time?
Two weeks. Yeah, we try to keep it under 2 weeks.
What's the most, like, common user error?
Don't know how to hold a pistol.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they limp wrist the gun. So, okay. like, you can limp wrist, like, a 5-inch gun. Mm-hmm. You can't limp wrist a 3-inch gun or a 3.5-inch gun. You got to, you know, your shooting hand, you don't really want to grip the gun that hard. But your support hand, that's the one that controls the recoil. But you got to make sure your wrists are locked. And a lot of guys don't do that, you know. They want to shoot one-handed. They want to shoot like teacup. You know, like they're holding a teacup, you know, things like that. And they want a smaller gun for concealment, but, you know, understanding a smaller gun, regardless of what brand it, what it is, it could be, you know, a Glock 26. It can be our 3-inch Baby Rock. It can be, you know, one of those little tiny XDs or one of those little SIGs. You gotta get on the gun. You got to get to know the gun and know the characteristics of it.
Well, it's a tool too, right? So you gotta understand if you're shooting a 3-inch barrel, it's not gonna be as accurate as a 5-inch barrel, right? It's
just, not necessarily true, man. I mean, like on a 45, I mean, a lot of these 3 and 3.5 inch commander or officer size guns we get back, those things are shooters.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, it just cloverleaf tear at 25 yards on a gun. I mean, and that's running factory ammo. That's nothing special. So, I mean, some guns, yes, they're going to, you know, we guarantee, I think, 3 inches at 15 yards. And then if it's over that, with us using our factory ammo, if it comes in for any accuracy issues, we find out why. You know, is it a problem with the frame? Is it a problem with the slide? Is it a problem with the barrel? You know, and then we diagnose and fix from there.
Well, let me ask you a question. When it comes to shotguns, new guys get on the field, what's the most important thing for them to do to maintain that shotgun during the season or before the season?
Clean it.
Now, is that like a full breakdown, or do you just spray it with oil and call it good, make sure it's still cycling?
That's not cleaning. That's...
Well,
that's
some guys would say different.
That's soaking.
See, he doesn't... Yeah, it's soaking. Do you soak in the oil, dip it, and call it good, or...
Yeah, I mean, I could say there's been a time or two that I whipped out the can of WD-40, hold the gun upside down, and just give it the beans.
I had to finally clean my gun the other day because it was having some issues, and I'm like, I know what it is. It's gunked up. I can see it from here.
We normally clean ours right before the season and about mid-season. But I also keep a little gun oil in the bag just in case we need to. Sometimes, I mean, you'd be surprised, especially on your boat going through tooling, man, you get a lot of stuff in that gun and don't even know it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
seeds, I pulled mine
out.
Sticks and reeds and...
I'd suck.
Or if you're walking and cutting mud. You're gonna get mud on your hands in the front of the gun.
Yeah, I shot mine all last season. Shot a couple rounds of sporting clays this season, a couple rounds of clays this season, and then took it out for the first two hunts, and the second hunt, it's like... Dude, no. You gotta clean me at some point.
Chunk.
And I look down and there's chunky stuff on the slide. I'm like, oh, dude.
Yeah, when you pull that slide back, it makes a little grind. And you tell you, I think you might need a spray down when we get home.
One more season.
Just dump it in the water, it'll clean it good enough, right?
Someone was telling me with those Berettas, that's the way they do it. They just take a whole can of WD-40 every morning, just fill up the inside of the barrel.
Some guns with the actions they got needs to be run wet. Some guns can be ran relatively dry.
I've got an AR that tolerances on are so tight. If I don't run it like dripping wet,
mm-hmm.
it won't cycle right. it just won't. And I don't care what ammo I run through it, it just has issues. So I know I'm running that gun soaking wet. That's just the way it is.
We probably ought to wrap it up.
Sean did invite us out here to do something awesome, Dave. What's going on out here at your plant today?
We've got a political rally for Alan Lexalt, Donald Trump Jr., and Rick Harrison from Pawn Stars is going to be here.
Oh, that's awesome, man.
So, yeah, we got Trump Jr. out here. We'll get to go play around with that a little bit. So we'll get out of here. Thanks, Sean, for having us and welcoming us into your facility.
Well, thanks for coming, guys.
Thanks, Health Martin. Thank you for providing a great product and for supporting Win. The other thing we haven't mentioned is, if those that don't know, is Sean, for all the work that he's done, he was the Win Sportsman of the Year this year, and we really do appreciate all you do for the sportsman.
Sean didn't do the work to become Sportsman of the Year. He just does what's right.
He didn't know he was going to get it until he showed up at the banquet.
I didn't know I was going to get it until you called my name.
Yeah.
I didn't even look. I mean,
you didn't look at the program?
Well, yeah, because I'm sitting there, everybody's coming up, we're just talking and shooting the breeze, and so I'm like, so I was like, okay, I guess this is happening.
All right, so thank you guys again for bringing us in. You know, if you're going to go out this weekend, why don't you try to take somebody with you if you can? If you're going to take somebody with you, why don't you try to teach them something? And if you can't take somebody or teach somebody, make sure you hunt hard.